Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Crazy Trucker by Victoria Red. This event occurred on a summer evening. My mother was driving with me in shotgun and my twin sister and my little brother in the back. We were going to our family's cabin in Western Maryland, 4 hours away from our home in Pennsylvania at the time. Cass and I were 12. My brother was much younger and asleep in his booster seat. Camping in Western Maryland was our favorite place. So we were all very excited, including my mother. Now, the car ride, on the other hand, was always miserable. It was hot with no AC in the car, and we didn't have phones back then. So the few music stations we picked up on the radio that wasn't religious gospel and idle conversation were the only thing that we had for about 4 of those hours. So, more often than not, Cass and I would stare out the window, making up stories about the people we saw and where they were going. And when we drove by truckers, we would try to get them to blow their horns, which was always very satisfying when they'd oblige. But that's where the trouble really began. Cass and I were early bloomers, so by 12 we were already looking much older than we were, and getting a lot of attention from older men wherever we went, much to my mother's annoyance. At the time, we were around 2 hours away from our cabin, when I made eye contact with a trucker and put my hand in the tug motion of the horn on those semi-trucks. He grinned at me and immediately obliged, which made me smile back. But he didn't stop staring and driving next to us. He had seen Cass behind me, my mother, and me, and unfortunately he decided he liked what he saw. I didn't know what some of the gestures he was doing meant until I was much older, and let's just say he was being, very vulgar. When my mom noticed, she told me to keep my eyes down and not encourage him by continuing to look. My mother attempted to slow down so he would pass us, but he also slowed down, staying level with us. Finally, my mother sped up and forced herself in front of his semi-truck. He moved into the slow lane and sped up to meet with us again. This went back and forth. No matter what my mother did, he would be there next to us. There were so few cars on the highway with us that day that we couldn't just disappear from him. I glance over, and I can see that his seat is raised enough that I can see his shoulder moving up and down. And even though Cass and I had no idea what he was doing at the time, my mother did. At this point, my mother flips off the man, and the smile continues on his face, growing wider. Now, we're getting to a point where the road turns into just 2 lanes. The trucker cuts us off, sharply, as it does and ends up in front of us. We're in such a secluded area now, that it would be a record if we even see more than 5 cars the entire way. The right lane is against the wall of this giant mountain, and to the left, beyond the safety railing, is a steep drop-off down the hill. The road is also getting more twisty as we got closer and closer to our destination. And it's also starting to get dark. The man is going slowly now and repeatedly swerves into the left lane as my mother tries to speed past him into the wrong road. My mother is getting angry and presses the gas hard. Now, with us in the wrong lane, he insists on pressing the gas too, trying to match our speed. We're midway past the truck when he begins veering into our lane, forcing us inches from the guardrail. Cass and I are screaming in terror, unable to control ourselves. Our brother wakes up and begins crying just because we are, and my mother has a death grip on the steering wheel and has a look of panic on her face. He keeps dipping in and back, obviously enjoying the terror he's causing. Finally, my mother slams on the brakes and we swerve right, almost smashing into the mountain wall. We stop then, angled towards the mountain. He doesn't stop and keeps moving forward. I can hear nothing but my heartbeat pounding in my ears. My mother is trembling and takes a deep breath. She doesn't look at us, but my mother struggles to look back up and get back on the road. I'd become terrified for a moment that even after avoiding being forced off the side of the cliff, we might end up falling backward anyway. After three attempts of backing up and pulling forward, we finally managed to pull back into the right lane, going no more than 30 miles per hour. I'm already prone to getting car sick, so I grab the plastic bag in my seat and I begin to puke my guts up from fear. My mother rolls down our windows and we drive in silence until we get to the last stop before our cabin, only about 45 minutes away. It's this little rural run-down gas station, but it'll do. We clean up and I brush my teeth in the dim bathroom, and we leave, now in complete darkness. The police in that area are notoriously unhelpful, so we don't even bother. Not to mention that cell reception is unheard of. We drive in silence the rest of the way there. When we finally get in that night, Cass and I try to talk about it, but my mom shuts it down immediately. She tells us that she was used to men being creepy like that to her, and that it had nothing to do with us, snapping that there's no reason a grown man would be looking at us like that. Anyways, she builds a campfire for herself and gets super stoned, making us go to bed as she calms down outside. Anyway, I'm just glad that we didn't die by being forced off the side of that mountain or even being smashed into the side of that hill that evening. Even though very few cars drove in that area, we were lucky that someone didn't whip around one of those curves and smash into us while we were stuck in the wrong lane. To this day, Cass and I have major anxiety about driving, and even just being near semi-trucks sets us both into an overwhelming panic. After that evening, no matter how boring the trip is to us or to you, definitely don't mess with truckers. A Terrifying Spirit by Anonymous. I'm an 18-year-old female who now lives with my fiancé. When we first started dating, he had just moved to Maryland from Seattle, so his house was new to him. A few weeks after we started seeing each other, he told me he was hearing tapping noises on his bedroom wall. At least once a week, he would report hearing footsteps in the hallway or tapping on the wall. Once I started sleeping over at his place, the activity seemingly increased. It began with hearing footsteps out in the hallway. Just to get an idea of how disturbing this is, the hallway outside his room is tile, and we would hear bare feet slapping on the tile when we knew no one else was in the house. Late one night, I went to the bathroom down the hall. I didn't bother to turn the hall light on, so I didn't find it strange when I saw a large black shadow in front of the laundry room. I assumed that it was just the drying rack and paid no attention. About an hour later, I went to the bathroom again, only to see that the shadow was gone. I asked my fiancé if he had gotten up to move the drying rack, to which he looked confused and asked,
"What drying rack?"
I told him when I had gone to the bathroom that I had seen a shadow in front of the laundry room, and he turned white. He assured me that he hadn't even done laundry that day. This shadow figure prompted me to look up my fiancé's address on a website called diedinhouse.com. This search revealed that a man had died in the house in 2010, who I will just call Robert, to protect his family's privacy. So as a joke, whenever something would bump in the night, we began to call out, "Robert, knock it off!" However, whatever was in the house did not like being called Robert, because the activity started to get scary after we began to use his name. Instead of quiet footsteps, we heard running down the stairs to our bedroom. Doors to closets started to open, lights would turn themselves on and off, and my fiancé's dogs began to growl at night. This was incredibly unsettling because these dogs never barked at anything besides other dogs and were so affectionate. One horrifying experience was when I was awake late at night while my fiancé was already asleep. The hall light was on and was shining underneath the door. I heard the footsteps coming down the stairs, and to my horror, I also saw two shadows appear underneath the door as if someone was standing in front of it. The shadow eventually moved away just before the hall light clicked off by itself. The breaking point came one night when I was staying at my own house, and my fiancé and I had fallen asleep on FaceTime. Around 3 in the morning, a horrible, screeching or growling sound woke me up. This sound was so loud it hurt my ears. I thought it was my speaker next to my bed malfunctioning, so I ripped the power cord out. However, it didn't stop, and then I realized it was coming from my phone, which was still on FaceTime. I turned my volume down, but the sound was still unbearable, so I figured it must be some sort of glitch and hung up the video call and went back to sleep. The following day, my fiancé called me in a panic, telling me that he had woken up at 3 in the morning hearing this horrible screeching sound. Only, he couldn't move. It was like he was stuck in some sort of sleep paralysis. He heard the ding of the FaceTime call ending while the screeching continued. He said it was so loud it felt like it was inside his skull. While in his sleep paralysis, he saw hooded figures around his room whispering. I felt sick and told him the sound had woken me up too, but I was incredibly freaked out since it continued in his room even after I ended the call. After this incident, my fiancé and his mother saged the entire house. After the sage, the activity came to a screeching halt. Now, we occasionally hear footsteps, but nothing nearly as terrifying as before. We are about to move to a new house, and I just hope there aren't any evil spirits in this house that we will have to deal with. Forest Haven Asylum by Anonymous. So this happened in February or late January of 2015. My friends and I decided to try an urban exploring wooded area investigation. I wasn't really in the condition to walk or run because I had recently suffered a pretty intense concussion. Weeks of research into this place was hyping me and Steven up. The site, Forest Haven, was a local asylum and institution for people with mental and intellectual disabilities. From what I've read, they once committed a Haitian woman with an intelligence deficit. She couldn't speak English, and they thought it was easier to commit her to the asylum and forget. More atrocities there involved dozens of patients strapped into beds with the restraint altering their bones to the point that they looked deformed with congenital disabilities. A lot of kids and mentally impaired adults suffered from asphyxiation. I'll put more links in the description with related articles if you'd like to learn more. I'm talking more about my experience and just needed to set up the context. Alright, so we decided to park on the opposite side of the asylum. If you Google it, the first photo you see is a small church and school-like building on a small path leading to the asylum. I'm not sure if it was part of it, but it most likely was. Unfortunately, the entirety of that building was caved in, so the chance of us exploring it was very minimal. We didn't have any rope or anything to pull us up. We decided to continue onward and through some incredibly thick forest and brush. We had to climb over a massive tree on the only animal path in sight. The more and more we walked in, the eerier the atmosphere became. I saw something white out of the corner of my eye, and man, I was not disappointed. White notes, paper sheets, just random paper sheets strewn throughout the primary forest before the asylum. I swear to God it felt like the Slender Man game. Besides my buddy Travis being spooked, Steven and I were in high spirits. Bandanas on our faces, knives in our hands, flashlights and phones. We wore all black hoodies except for Travis. As we passed the notes and reached the end of the forest, we saw the eeriness of the most prominent building on the asylum grounds. It had abandoned semi-trailers there, to rust for eternity. Not entirely sure why though. I ran as fast as we could to the building to stay covered. As we reached the first half of the enormous building, we turned on our flashlights and walked inside. I saw beds those children died on. I saw disgusting rooms with pillows and mattresses that were strewn about. I'm a firm atheist, but that place made me uncomfortable. Incredibly uncomfortable. There was loads of graffiti too. Some disrespectful and others comment on the duality of man. Some of it was racial slurs and swastikas. Steven and I felt so pumped and alert. I loved the rush the asylum brought. Travis took pictures and Steven and I cracked jokes about him being scared. The other rooms were pretty well lit, with windows removed and sunlight glowing through. But this room was something dark. Just incredibly dark. It had snowed about 1 week prior and the snow was almost completely melted at this point. And this day wasn't too bad, it was 55 to 60 degrees. There was a huge ice pillar. I don't know if Travis photographed it or not. I understood that ice wouldn't melt in the shade. But the sheer size of this pillar, from roof to ceiling of at least 12 feet, and a tree trunk around it in circumference, that's when it dawned on me. Maybe I didn't fully understand it then, but a few things that wouldn't happen anywhere else happened at that place. After being spooked thoroughly in the icy dark room, we climbed onto the roof and saw the melted snow in a substantial watery pile seeping through, looking as if it were going to collapse at any moment. We didn't dare walk past the dry areas of the roof and decided to get off a different way. So as we explored the biggest building, we made our way to the main building. As we entered this decrepit, ancient building, it's the ice room all over again. The doors were rusted and broken. Rooms tossed and ransacked. I climbed up into a level by myself since the staircase was blocked by some desk and wall shelves. I found nothing but sand in the staircase landing. This is in the middle of Maryland, nowhere near a beach, and this staircase was covered in sand. It wasn't concrete, crushed rock, or fine sand. It belonged on a shitty Maryland beach. For whatever reason, this made me terrified. I spoke to Stephen and Travis through a hole in the floor. They had been seeing a security guard roaming the area, and we were probably going to need to leave soon. I climbed the metal barrier on the landing, climbed down, and met with Stephen and Travis. We went out a window on the first floor, hid behind random metal barrels or something of that sort, and saw the car drive away. Travis was so freaking nervous that I started panicking. That's when he and Stephen took off in a sprint and I chased after them, being slower than all of them, unfortunately. Even though I wasn't as incompetent shape as them, I sprinted my ass out of there. As soon as we got to the forest, I was about 50 yards deep from the edge touching the asylum grounds, and they were about a 50 yard ahead of me, I saw the groundskeeper. He didn't stop chasing after us. We ran fast through the thicket, jumping over branches, avoiding the giant tree, and watching out for the abandoned building back to Stephen's car. We all got into the car and drove. There were no words said, all of our heartbeats were through the roof, and I cannot even replicate how fantastic and equally terrifying that day was.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
The Morning Visitor by MethodWriter85. I had this supervisor, Kate. One day, we had a discussion that turned into the unexplained, and she told me about something that happened when she was a teenager. She tries to debunk crazy things that have happened, but this is one she hasn't been able to. It was the summer after she graduated high school, sometime in the late half of the 1990s. She was 18 at the time. Her friend Billy was a few years older but still lived with his mother in their house. This was in a small city in western Maryland, and Billy's house had just enough land that he could throw raging day-to-night summer parties complete with bonfires. At the same time, they weren't very isolated, and random people from the surrounding neighborhoods would always show up at the party. One day, Billy met this skater kid named Nick, and he seemed chill. Being a social animal guy, Billy invited him to hang out with him at the house. Billy probably also took pity on Nick because Nick told him he was a runaway living at the park. So they would play video games, go on rides, and party till late at night. Nick started showing up every day at Billy's house, knocking at the door at 7 a.m. sharp and engaging him in the morning till night drinking. He was about 16 with dark eyes and dark spiky hair. Remember, this was the late 90s. He seemed relatively normal and everything except for a couple of things. The first was that he always wore the same thing, a plain t-shirt and a pair of camo print cargo shorts. Even though he was sleeping in a park, his clothes always looked clean. The second is that he was never seen eating or going to the bathroom, even though Nick drank heavily with Billy. Finally, oddly enough, no one remembers feeling Nick's skin, even my supervisor, who had sat next to him in a car during a road trip. She hung out with Billy and Nick at Billy's house 2 times, and each time she said her friend felt like something was very off with Nick, especially when he would give off this laugh that sounded very evil and maniacal. He also seemed to get kookier and weirder when they went on road trips and got further away from Billy City. Nick would also never shut up about his father's gun collection. Finally, Billy's hospitality reached its limits after 2 weeks of waking Billy up at 7 a.m. to go party. Billy snapped at Nick at his front door. He said, "Look, Nick, you've been coming here every morning for 2 weeks. You're waking up my mother who's trying to sleep. You need to go now. Please just come back later." Then he slammed the door shut. Nick never showed up again. Billy came to Katie a little bit later with a newspaper article. It was about Nick who had killed himself. Nick had escaped the mental asylum his parents had put him in Billy's town, got to his father's house, and shot himself with his father's gun. Billy was initially upset because he felt he must have put Nick over the edge when he kicked him out until he checked the dates. Unfortunately, Nick had committed suicide on July 10th, 2 entire weeks before even meeting Billy. The Walk by Aspiring Waffle. I am a 23-year-old woman, and I am half Cherokee from Georgia. When this story took place, my fiancé and I lived on a large farm in Maryland. We didn't use the farm, but we were renting a small house on the property, and we were free to come and go around the grounds. I was only 19 when this took place, and the only residents in our home were myself, my fiancé, and our cat and dog. Our cat was a lunatic barn cat that I had rescued because I couldn't say no to animals that need help, and our dog was my loyal pit bull, a sweet, cuddly scaredy cat. She weighs about 75 pounds and is afraid of her own shadow. Our farm was situated approximately 20 acres of land, and our driveway was about a half mile long. So usually when I would get home from work, my loyal dog and I would go for a walk, and usually I brought my fiancé with me. Not that I was afraid to go out alone, just that he spends too much time playing games. Anything to get him to use his legs a bit. We would walk down the long driveway, and then after that, there was a 12-mile-long road through the woods and farms until it finally reconnected with civilization. So it was safe to say that we were far, far from other people, except for our landlord, of course. The first mile was through open farmland, followed by a brief patch of forest, and then about a half mile of wheat fields, and solid forest for 2 more miles. Now that you have a bit of the layout, on to the creepy bit. So it started like any other weekday evening. My fiancé and I returned home from work to our happy cottage and happy pets. Harley, our dog, was frantic to go for a walk, so I quieted her, changed into my walking clothes, and asked my fiancé if he would join me. He had gotten home shortly after me and said he had seen one of the coyotes that we have around close to the field by our house. Still, as you may know, coyotes are mostly scavengers, especially out here on the East Coast, so I wasn't too worried, and I am very capable of defending myself if need be. I called him a puss and then told Harley that we could go without him. Laughing to myself, we left the cottage and started walking toward the driveway. The sun was going down, the October air had started to get a chill, and it rustled through the cornfields next to our long driveway. The corn was about 6 feet tall at this point in the year and impossible to see through, so I assumed that my fiancé was just trying to scare me because there was no way he could have seen a coyote in this field. Harley was enjoying her time in the area, tearing in and out of the corn stalks on our way up to the driveway, and I knew that, as big of a coward as she was, she would quickly alert me to any danger running by. By the time I reached the end of the driveway, the sun had set, and the moon, which had already come out, was shining high about the cornfields. It wasn't quite complete, but it provided enough light that I didn't need to use my flashlight or Harley's collar light. We turned left down the road and proceeded across the first section of the field. The first field was soybeans. If you don't know, they are relatively short plants that don't really cover much. Nothing more than a rabbit could really hide in them. Off in the distance, I spotted a few deer, but nothing alarming. So we relaxed and enjoyed our walk through the night air. I threw a stick and Harley brought it back over and over again. Typical dog and owner stuff. We reached the first small section of trees and Harley stopped and bumped into my leg, letting me know there was something ahead. It wasn't a coyote or a deer, but a rabbit that had been hit by a passing car and was still struggling. As much as I hate to say this, there was no way it was going to live, and honestly, it's probably what drew the coyote pack in. I knelt by it, using my knife, quickly putting it out of his misery, as my family had taught me to do so in the past, feeling sad but somewhat relieved that we had only encountered a handful of deer in this poor rabbit. We continued our walk past into the following field. This was a wheat field, and the wheat was about ready to harvest, so it was pretty tall and hard to see. The area was quiet, though, and Harley didn't do anything, so I figured the coyotes had passed on. Now, this is the part that you've been waiting for, and I don't know what it was, but here it is. We rounded the corner of the field and into an area with wheat on our left and forest on our right. The air seemed to go still. Harley got closer to me and I heard rustling in the wheat field. I saw 3 tails circling back toward the forest. Crap, coyotes. The eastern coyotes are small, but in a pack they get pretty ballsy. Harley raised her hackles, and I yelled, "Get out of here! Go on! F off!" as loud as I could, trying to get the coyotes startled and scattering off into the trees. I decided to turn around and get out of there before they regroup because I was brave, but I was not going to walk into a darkened forest with a coyote pack and a cowardly pit bull. We turned back, and I heard a rustling in the wheat again. A confused coyote, maybe? I thought it must be, but no. Harley was standing stock still, staring at the grain, and I whistled for her to come with me. The high-pitched, ear-piercing, two-fingered whistle that we all know and love. That snapped her out of it for a second when my whistle was returned from inside the wheat. All of a sudden, all of the family legend I had heard came flooding back to me, and I expected to see a small, thin creature emerge. But nothing did. I didn't smell rotting meat or feel a sense of dread. Instead, I was transfixed with fear and curiosity. I whistled again, and the whistle was again returned, very human-sounding, but not at the same time. Against my better judgment, I said,
"Hello?"
My voice replied, but in a staticky way,
"Hello?"
My hand was on my knife, and I said,
"Show yourself."
There was silence. No bugs, no coyotes, no Harley noises, just my breath. Slowly, the rustling started again, and I turned on my flashlight. I shined it into the wheat field, and what I saw still confuses me to this day. Animal eyes. Green and yellow. They were reflecting off of the light back at me. But what was connected to those eyes didn't make sense. There was a girl, no more than 14, maybe 16 years old at most, crouched in the wheat. She wore what I think must have been some kind of deerskin or fur, and she was naked otherwise. She was skinny and looked malnourished, but almost like she had never even seen the sunlight. Her hair was long and tangled with wheat and leaves. Under any other circumstances, I would have said she was beautiful, but at that moment, she was terrifying. We stared at each other for what must have been a solid minute or so, but felt like much longer until I heard the unmistakable coyote howl from the forest. Both of our heads snapped toward the noise, and immediately I heard her take off through the wheat toward the sound. At that moment, Harley took off toward the house and I went after her. We didn't stop running until we got to the driveway. I finally stopped, not wanting my fiancé to know I was running away from something. I could still hear the howling in the distance, and we started walking at a brisk pace. We made it back to the cottage with no further problems, and I didn't tell my fiancé about it, not wanting him to go out with the gun. She hadn't hurt me, so I didn't think it right to hunt her. I was awoken in the middle of the night by that same sound of coyotes, but this wasn't very unusual, I guess. They were normally outside of our stuff. But I was wondering if she was with them. When I was coming home from work about a month later, I had stopped obsessing about that night, and I almost thought that I had imagined it, when I had to slam on my brakes for something on the road. It was dark. When my headlights hit its eyes, it reflected green and yellow. It was a large coyote, the biggest I had ever seen. It just stared at my car for a moment, and ran back off into the woods. I know this sounds crazy, but I still wonder if that was the same girl. To get this story started, here is a bit of background information about myself. I am a female, 17 years of age. I'm very petite, weighing about 100 pounds and standing at just 5'3". I recently joined my local gym around January 2019 and have started a routine of when I work out every day, except for Monday, sometime around 6 p.m. usually, and usually I'll stay for about an hour or two depending on the day and how I feel. Anyone who goes to the gym regularly notices others around them and gets familiar with what times and machines are usually available. And if a new person comes, you usually notice them. My point is that you get used to these people in the gym with you, whether or not you communicate with them. As a girl who goes to the gym, from my experience, you will get the occasional glance from a weirdo or make awkward eye contact with someone staring at you in the mirror. But all you can do is stare back at them dead in the eyes and give them the nastiest look of disgust. Now, the time that I go to the gym is when everyone usually starts to leave. I am very antisocial and shy, so this works out great for me. Or so I had thought, having some alone time would be excellent. And if something were to happen, they would have cameras everywhere. Now I know this is a stupid way to think, but knowing that you had to have a key card to get into the gym and one to get out was a comfort along with the cameras. For this past month of me doing my workouts, I got this weird vibe from this random guy we will call Randy. As I said, you usually get people looking at you, so it is hard to tell if someone is genuinely a significant threat or just someone being a creep. Either way, both are usually bad. but it's difficult to distinguish the two. I told my mom about this Randy guy because my gut feeling told me something was just wrong and I felt like I needed some advice. She told me we should tell the manager and have them kick him out. But being naive and friendly, I didn't want to kick a guy out just for giving me the creeps. It wasn't a good argument at the time. I started to notice some of the other girls weren't coming as regularly as they would. I brushed this off thinking they had work or were out of town or something. It was really none of my business, but it was something to note. The staff of the gym leaves around 6:30 p.m., and I noticed that Randy was coming in almost precisely when the manager and staff would leave. Again, I didn't really pay too much attention to this because he could have just been a regular person trying to work out at a specific time due to his job or whatever was going on in his life. This was a huge mistake on my end. Here is me trying to reason with myself and rationalize that nothing was going on because I constantly saw Randy. So I considered him one of the regulars, I guess. But this is where the story actually begins. I went to do my daily workout, and the manager, let's call her Alyssa, came up and talked to me about other girls who worked out at the same time I did. These girls were complaining about Randy secretly recording them while they worked out. The girls changed their workout schedule due to Randy, which explains why I saw fewer and fewer of them. She asked me if I had seen any men holding their phone up to their chest and walking with the camera pointed outwards. I said no, until I told Alyssa about this random man Randy, who was starting to creep me out. She said she would look into it and update me on the situation, mainly since I'm underage. The next day, Alyssa talked to me. She said that one of the girls who complained about him pointed him out in the cameras and that she would wait for Randy to come back into the gym, kick him out, and trespass him if he ever came back. She left that night not knowing what had happened because Alyssa was still waiting after I left. I returned to the gym that following Tuesday and Alyssa told me everything that had gone down. She had said that she waited till Randy and his buddy, who we will call Kyle, came to the gym and were parked outside. Alyssa had a friend who was a sheriff. Apparently, he rang up Randy's license plates, and to both of their surprises, he was a registered sex offender and had put on probation recently. Alyssa then found out that Randy didn't even have a keycard, meaning he was not a member of the gym and shouldn't have been using the gym, period. His friend Kyle had a keycard and was letting Randy in. They would work out sometimes and wait for the staff to leave and do creepy things. Alyssa prohibited both of the men entering the gym again and kicked them out. The scary thing is that I remember being alone in that gym with those two guys very often. They blended in very well, and I consider them just average workout people. I'm still not sure if Randy or Kyle recorded me, but Alyssa told me she was going to look through the footage and let me know any other news she could, such as them recording me and all that. It is terrifying to think that I got accustomed to these guys regularly being at the gym. I am so thankful that Alyssa kept me informed on the situation. As terrifying as it is, it shows that you should always be aware of what's happening around you and to trust your instincts. It also shows that you never can trust anyone you think you might know. As stupid as it sounds, it's easy to get comfortable with people we see daily even if we don't know who they are. But who knows what might have happened if I caught Randy and Kyle alone again. Please be careful at all times. Never judge anyone for good or bad until you actually know them. You never know what might be out there to hurt you. Thank you for your time in reading the story.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Every Barbie Has Her Ken by Jay Beardify. At my college, Halloween is the social event of the year. As soon as the leaves start to change, the campus comes alive. Art students gather in the quad to design and assemble homemade costumes. Sororities hold pumpkin carving competitions, and fraternities compete to throw the wildest, freakiest parties imaginable. 2 years ago, Kappa Alpha hired costume actors to hide inside the closets and hide behind the shower curtains at the party to give people jump scares. But they lost the informal competition to one of the other medical fraternities who'd stolen a real John Doe corpse from the autopsy lab and put it in their bathtub full of ice and drinks. They got in a lot of trouble for that one. Everyone was always trying to outdo each other. I guess it's no surprise that Halloween here has a dark side as well. Those jump scare actors hiding in the Kappa Alpha house, they weren't all actors. One was a guy that just came off the street, slipped on a costume, and tried to drag a girl from the party into the abandoned basement. But some of the guys fought him off. He was never caught. Oh, and the corpse at that medical fraternity party? The morning after, they found someone had bitten pieces off of it. Last year, my buddy Matt was in charge of organizing our frat's Halloween party. He's a buff, blonde, handsome guy with a good sense of humor. So, one of us jokingly suggested his costume should be Ken from the Barbie franchise. And he went with it. Matt even started walking around campus in costume the week before Halloween, trying to drum up interest in our party. I noticed, though, he had started looking worn and haggard. I asked him what was going wrong.
"You wouldn't even believe me if I told you,"
was his tired response. As it turned out, he didn't have to. A few nights later, as we were unloading crates of fake spider webs to decorate the frat house, I saw her for the first time. The woman was dressed in all pink in freakishly exaggerated makeup and big blonde hair. She was coming towards us along the sidewalk, and she was moving like a doll. "Matt, there's..." The woman just stopped beneath a streetlight, staring at my friend. But when I finally got him to turn around, the bulb flickered and she was gone. The next day I saw her again, or another woman just like her, walking through the hallway between classes. Her proportions were all wrong, if like a Barbie doll had become human. Her wrist and ankles were way too thin. Her chest and hips too big. I felt sick, thinking of how a person could have mutilated their body to get in such a shape like that. But on her face was a perfect plastic smile. As she passed by, she ran her freakishly long pink fingernails through Matt's hair.
"See you at the party, Ken, baby,"
she whispered. I turned to say something, but she had already turned around and been carried away by the crowd.
"That," Matt shuddered. "That is the wrong Barbie. I see her everywhere. The other day, while I was on the toilet, someone came into the bathroom in hot pink heels. She stood right outside of the stall door, whispering, 'Ken, baby, don't you want to come out and play?' By the time I got up, she was gone. One of the sororities must be screwing with me. That's gotta be it, right?"
I wasn't so sure. Maybe it was just her tanning bed baked, wrinkly skin, but Matt's Barbie looked too old to still be in college. I guess I shouldn't have been surprised to see her at the fraternity party. Matt's Barbie was bringing him a pair of drinks, one for him and one for her. She floated through the crowd of students like a blonde cloud in hot pink heels, wearing that big fake smile. Now that I was closer to her, I realized she couldn't have made any other expression. It was like her face had been plastic surgery to only make that smile. Forever. Just like a doll's, she didn't speak to anyone except Matt, and she called him Ken all night. She whispered to him in a cutesy but also really creepy babying voice that made her face seem even more like a plastic mask. I was worried about my friend. I went through all three floors of the house asking if anyone knew the woman in the Barbie outfit, but nobody did. I figured it was time to tell Matt to throw her out, but when I went back downstairs, Barbie was sitting on Matt's lap, and he had a boozy, contented smile on his face. Everyone else, obviously uncomfortable around this weirdly proportioned stranger, but it was Matt's party. If he wanted to make out with an older woman with a thing for Barbie, who the hell were we to deny him? I didn't see Matt again until I was getting some vodka out of the ice-filled bathtub a few hours later. He came stumbling in, grabbed the sides of the toilet, and puked up an awful-smelling hot pink liquid.
"Bitch,"
he snarled. "She put something in my drink. She's out of here." He staggered woozily back into the crowd. I breathed a sigh of relief. Barbie was giving me creeps. I'd be glad to see her gone, honestly. But wait, Matt was drugged. Could he really handle her on his own? I pushed my way through the costumed crowd. No Matt. I started to panic and ran out front. Barbie had her hands under Matt's armpits. She was dragging him towards the open back door of some sort of white van. I must have screamed because a bunch of guys came running. When we surrounded her, she pulled a needle of this... I don't even know how to explain it. It was some sort of substance inside. Which one of you Ken boys wants to find out what's in the needle? She hissed at us in that weird baby voice. We put our hands up and backed off, but the distraction gave Matt time to tear himself out of the grasp of her freakishly long nails. Still jabbing the needle in our direction, Barbie got into the driver's seat in burnt rubber. I scrambled to read the license plate as the van's taillights disappeared into the chilly Halloween night. We stood there in silence for quite a few minutes, panting, too stunned by what we had just seen to say freaking anything. Matt puked up another puddle of that acidic pink stuff, and we knew we had to get him to the hospital. It was an unspoken rule at our college that we never went to the police about any shenanigans that we got up to on Halloween. But this was different. Matt had been drugged. The license plate number of the white van had found it to be stolen. They traced it to an abandoned, foreclosed house in a rundown suburb on the edge of town, and what they discovered in the basement confirmed our story. Both of the young men found in the abandoned house had been the same age, body type, and hair color as Matt. Their corpses had even been dressed in matching Ken costumes. Our Barbie had apparently been doing amateur plastic surgery on their faces and bodies, trying to make them perfect, trying to make them like her. Of course, there was no anesthesia, and losing so much blood is always fatal. I'm sure that if we wouldn't have stopped the woman in pink, the same thing would have happened to Matt. What scares me the most, however, is that our Barbie is still out there, cruising Halloween parties, looking for her next Ken. Delivery Driver by E.B. Davis. I'm a delivery driver. Sometimes I wake up not remembering where I am. Yeah, it's not the usual sort of delivery job. Take this morning, for instance. Right now, I've just polished off an omelet and I am finishing off my coffee before hitting the road. About an hour ago, I woke up in a room in a Motel 6 across the street. It had been uncomfortably warm, the failing air conditioning still chugging away, and I had woken with a nasty headache, the result of a poor night's sleep. Other than that, I had no idea where I was. It was the heat that I remembered first, if you consider it a memory and not something that never went away. I had checked in at about 7 the previous evening. It was a hot summer day, western exposure, and the poor air conditioner never even had a chance. But if I would have known that this air conditioning would fail so badly, I would have asked for a different room or gone somewhere else. I'm not very picky, I just like to not be hot. I pulled the double curtain open just a bit to notice my view of Interstate 5 real up close. Oh, that's right. I was in Redding, Northern California. With that keystone in place, the rest of my memory popped back into place rather well. Yesterday, I had woken up in Eugene, Oregon, made stops in Florence, Eureka, Cave Junction, Weed, and finally Redding before stopping for the night. The day before that, I had woken in Vancouver, British Columbia, with stops in Bellingham, Edison, Alma, Aberdeen, and Astoria before making my way south to Eugene. Today I had stops to make in Zamora, Livermore, Castroville, and Grapevine. Not sure yet where I'll stop tomorrow. Haven't checked my list yet, but it doesn't really matter much. I suppose my memory is pretty decent when I've got a reference to start from. Maybe that's part of why I was picked for this job. Like I said, it's not the usual sort. I drive most of the day and stop somewhere, usually somebody's house or apartment. I drop off a package, often I'll pick up a new one from the same customer and then drive on to the next. I've got a list, a few weeks worth, updated regularly. I've only met my employer, or I suppose I should say my fellow employee of our employer once, when I was hired. It was strange. First, they recruited me, right out of the blue, a total cold call. Second, I didn't even think having a PhD was a usual criteria for delivery drivers, you know? Since then, I've only communicated by email or phone, and rarely that. I hadn't expected to accept the offer when I showed up at the little commercial office. The pay was unsustainably generous. I drive a company car they've paid for, though they let me pick it out. I suggested a Mercedes S-Class as a joke, but they didn't hesitate. They gave me a card for food and gas expenses, also hotels. Understand that I don't always sleep in cheap, crummy, sleazy hotels. I'll often stop at a swaggy 4-star resort. It's just that sometimes you just want to get off the road and put your feet up. Even the cheap rooms usually offer a basic standard of quality, and when you're on the road all day every day, the bad rooms and the good rooms tend to just blur together. That's why sometimes I just don't remember where I am. Food, hotels, entertainment, really, I have a lot of leeway in how I want to go about my day. Even on the weekends and holidays, I can still use the card. The only thing I need to concern myself with are the few simple aspects of the job. I knock on a stranger's door. I give them the package I've been carrying, and or they give me a new one. The package is of reasonable proportions, never too big or heavy or unwieldy, very nondescript. I place that package in the trunk of my car, always the trunk, drive to the drop-off, and repeat. I'm to drive carefully and responsibly, which I'd always do anyway, and I'm not to drink or take drugs while driving, or, for that matter, drive while tired or texting, which I'd never do anyway. Minor speeding is not really much of an issue. 5 or 10 over the speed limit on a freeway is not a big deal. If there's any kind of delay, that's not my fault. Unexpected road closures, mechanical trouble, major incidents, inclement weather, it's not really a problem. I just need to phone it in and the company will take care of it. Contact the customers and I can continue on when possible. I'm to not draw attention to myself. If I'm pulled over, I'm to act responsibly and respectfully. And if I receive a ticket, the company will pay the fine. Several years in and I've never had a problem. I'm absolutely not to give a police officer any probable cause to search the trunk or the package therein. If a police officer does search, I am to, at the immediate earliest opportunity, call the number the company had me memorize and their legal department will take care of the situation. Afterwards, my position will be terminated and I'll be giving a generous severance package. The contract makes it very clear that the company is totally liable for any contents of the package and I am simply a courier, ignorant of the package's contents. I am never to investigate the contents of the package. If I attempt to, my position will be immediately terminated without any severance package. The contract makes it clear that this is how I personally remain unliable for any of the contents. What my contract doesn't say, but I can only guess, is that this is the reason for my exorbitant salary. I suppose maybe there are filthy rich people out there who will pay large sums of money to have various private but perfectly legal items delivered discreetly. I honestly don't think that's the case though for many of these. First, most of the rich people I've met are pretty stingy and would ship something highly valuable by UPS, ground service if they could save a few bucks. Second, I'm pretty sure our customers aren't rich. I meet them personally at their doors. The stop in Elma the other day was in a freaking trailer park. So naturally, my speculation, and for legal purposes, I'll repeat, this is only speculation, was that maybe these packages have illegal contents. I used to spend a lot of time thinking and worrying about what sort of illegal content it could be. I don't think it's drugs, they have their own system of mules for that, right? Maybe that's only on TV, I don't know. Of all the things it could be though, the two possibilities that cost me the most consternation were smuggling or fencing in some kind of valuable commodity, like jewels or works of art. The only other thing that's related that kinda had me nervous was smuggling priceless antiquities. I've read articles about how that's a very lucrative trade, how it's a very small and organized community, and very, very rich. I still don't know what the deal is with the customers, though. Or maybe that's just some sort of front. There was also something kind of exciting about being involved with illicit antiquities trades. Like, I was a minor bad guy out of an Indiana Jones movie. Now don't get me wrong, I don't support the trade and would prefer those things find their way to museums. I was only ever speculating about that anyway, usually to keep my mind occupied during the more boring parts of the drive. There are other illegal things I'd very much not want to be transporting on a more moral level. I know better now, and besides, they were paying me specifically not to know what was in the packages I was delivering. And boy, do they pay. The thing is, I'm hardly ever at home. I paid off my mortgage the first year. The only expenses I really pay are property taxes, housekeeping services, insurance, and utilities. That means the paychecks just keep stacking up in my account. I thought about investing in stocks or something. I mean, if you've got money, you can leverage it to make more money. But I'm in no rush. I don't think I'll be needing to invest. I have no concern about making more money than I've already got. In fact, it's piling up so fast that I thought I might start buying up more houses. Not as real estate investment, not at first. The idea was I'd buy a house in different parts of the country, and if I were in the state on a weekend trip or something, I could stay at that house while I was out on my route, just for the comfort of it. I'd also be something like a security blanket. If I ever did quit or lose this job and didn't want to travel anymore, I could pick my favorite place to live and sell the other houses, which would most certainly appreciate faster than the rest of my savings account interest ever could. So that's why I'm perfectly content with being a delivery driver. You know what? I enjoyed the driving too. It's a nice perk. You might think long distance driving all day must be a terrible bore that wears you out. And that's partly true, I won't lie. But in my opinion, the sights I've seen make it all worth it. I get off the main freeway a lot too, so it's not like it's just long distance trips you're trying to finish as fast as possible. I see grand sights, the Columbia River Gorge at sunset in autumn, and the Grand Tetons at dawn. The New York skyline from all the bridges, the lights of LA at night from the Hollywood Hills, and so on. It's the subtle stuff, though, that makes your heart ache. I remember a curving, winding road going over rolling hills in Nebraska with pretty little farmhouses around each bend. An old barn in Vermont with the fog growing in sheets on the low ground at dusk. The view from a recently plowed road in the High Cascades where the peaks surrounding you were covered in such fresh snow that it looked like marshmallow fluff. A great fault block mountain rising out of the barren flatlands of eastern Oregon. So high, so wide, it generated its own rich ecosystems. A little old mining town in West Virginia where all of the buildings were so old, they all had historical provenance. Not because they're preserved by historical societies, but because they've been well used and maintained by the people that love them. A lightning storm at night in rural Louisiana that seemed to roll on for infinity. I thought about getting a little dashboard camera and recording my trips. I guess that's what led to it all unraveling. I'd forgotten I'd bought the thing online on a whim from a hotel room until I found it among the unusual stack of packages on a trip home. By then, I'd set the idea aside as rather pointless. I'd never find the time to edit such a video anyway, let alone watch it. The scenery I had always enjoyed was going to be a fleeting moment enjoyed spontaneously and maybe again in memory. A dash cam would never really recapture the moments. So then I started thinking about what else I could use the little camera for. I guess it was always a dumb idea. Now that I look back, I don't know why I thought of it in the first place. I had the camera, I had the car, I had the mysterious packages in the trunk. I'm not going to say I never thought about opening the packages. It was sort of like being at some kind of console at work, with a big red button, and your boss tells you that no matter what, never push the big red button. Sure, you wonder what would happen. That temptation, though, never came close to breaking my will, or at least my will to keep getting paid so well. I guess that's why I put the camera in the trunk, along with a floodlight. I could study the package without actually opening it. That's what the contract said, after all. I was supposed to keep the package in the trunk and I was not supposed to examine its contents. It never said anything about the exterior. It never said anything about not having cameras in the trunk. I know now that that must have been some sort of loophole my employers had never really considered. I suppose in the future, they will fill that loophole up. I only found the loophole by dumb luck. I never really used the car's navigation system. I always had a great sense of direction, and I'd go over all the directions to my destinations from the luxury of my hotel room the night before. So, the large monitor on the dash of my luxury car seldom displayed anything but the station ID of the radio channel or the title of the audiobook I was listening to.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
So I ran a USB cable from it, all the way to the trunk, through the back seats to the console. The video feed showed up at the push of a button on my steering wheel. I immediately wondered why I even bothered. On the first trip I checked, and it was exactly what I'd expect. A view of my trunk, 12 packs of Coke, my toolbox, and the package. All exactly as I had left it. I think I remember feeling embarrassed, so I turned off the feed. I turned it back on the next few deliveries, and each time was the same, so I almost forgot I'd even bothered in the first place. It was some time later, I don't remember exactly how much, but I was on the road to Spooner, Wisconsin. I was scrolling through my media during one of those boring stretches. I came to the trunk cam feed and paused because something felt off. I'm not sure why, I just felt the little hairs on my arms raise up. It was an instinctual sort of feeling. Now that I look back, I wonder if it was the instinct that led me to put the camera in the first place, or something else. I kept the feed on as I drove and kept glancing at the screen suspiciously. My first thought was that there was some kind of light out. It looked shadowy somehow, except that didn't make any sense. There was only one light in the trunk, the floodlight I had put on a hook on the ceiling of the trunk. It was bright as it had ever been, except in the spot by the package I was carrying. I couldn't figure it out. I kept driving and I kept my eye on it, and it kept getting darker and darker. Then I noticed the spot on the package itself. It was sort of the reverse of a light from a flashlight, a spot of darkness if you will, round and fairly distinct if not sharp, and it grew. It grew sort of like a tumor, like you might imagine a small melanoma on pale skin, getting bigger and bigger. It grew until the whole package was very dark despite the light. I kept trying to think of a reasonable explanation. Camera artifacts, digital compression, LED branding glitches, but nothing really explained it. Then it got blacker. The total absence of light, it was like a package wrapped in a black paper. It was like some kind of hole in three dimensions matching perfectly the length, width, and height of the package. I felt sure if I could change the position of the camera, the hole would change with proportions of the package. I almost wanted to pull over and open the trunk to see it with my own two eyes, but now I was way too close to the delivery site, so I waited and I drove another 20 miles or so. I turned the feed off because I couldn't handle the temptation, and I quite frankly didn't want to see what the heck was going on. When I finally stopped and popped the trunk, the package looked exactly like it was supposed to. Brown paper wrapping, the kind of clear tape with the little parallel strings running through it, an address label with my company's letterhead on it. The man who signed it was an older man living in what looked like a vacation cabin on a lake. He seemed no different than any other customer. He gave me another package to deliver, this one to Minnesota. If he noticed me acting strange, he didn't let on at all. One of the more personal things about this whole experience was that I was honestly disturbed how quickly I accepted it all. I used to be a rational, logical, scientifically minded person. Now, within the span of literally an hour, I had accepted the paranormal wholesale. Everything I understood about the world was thrown out the window. I kept expecting my phone to ring, a company representative calling me to tell me about my position being terminated, but they somehow just physically knew that their cover had been blown. I had a very restless night that night in my hotel room in Minneapolis. I thought my life was in danger. I was dealing with something far beyond my mortal understanding. No one ever came, though. No one ever called. No demon teleported behind me and stole my soul. I don't think my employers even know. Like I said, I think I found a loophole they never considered. The next several deliveries did nothing unusual. Most don't. I don't think it's because of any of these packages are, you know, normal. No, I think it's the opposite. It's just whatever's wrong with them isn't always visible. When I do see something strange, it's always different. One delivery in New Mexico started bulging outwards like it was breathing in and out for hundreds of miles. There was another package, a small one that almost bulged out, but instead of the entire surface bulging out, it was only like little dimples that would move around in certain areas. Sort of imagine like fingers or something like that trying to press out, only they moved in no pattern of a hand. There was one package that turned itself over and over, like a rectangular opaque hamster ball, but they never moved once from its original position. There was another one that floated. Whenever I braked or turned corners, it would drift in the appropriate direction, then drift back. There was one that burst into a flame. It was small at first, the same flame about the size of a lit match. It grew, though, and slower than you would have expected from a paper-wrapped package. By the time half of the package had ignited, the trunk was filling with smoke. I should have been able to smell it, but somehow I just didn't. A few miles later, and it was fully engulfed. I could hardly see the flames through the smoke. In time, the camera went fully black. That was the only time I ever stopped a car to check. I opened up the trunk and the package, and everything else was perfectly normal. I grabbed a Coke out of the case, just for cover, just because, you know, I had a strange feeling I was being watched. One time, a package started to turn itself inside out. I saw bubble wrap just before I turned off the feed. I don't know if that counted as inspecting the contents of the package, but I didn't want to risk it. I never turned the feed on again until that package had been delivered. I'm not trying to be facetious or do some sort of unknowable cosmic horror thing. I literally just can't describe it, but here is my best attempt. The package flattened out like the scent of fresh strawberries. The package upwised ponderously like a green barnacle. The package integrated an overripe mirror. It's like I have explanation aphasia. I have a real conundrum here. There's a part of me that wants to quit, put in 2 weeks notice. Thank you, it was nice working for you, then retire in some mansion on a tropical island and never worry about it again. A part of me wants to know and see through this, though. I'll never have a connection to the paranormal again. How can I live with myself if I leave now without understanding? I think if I just keep going, it's all going to come to a head at some point anyway. It's starting to leak out. The supernatural. I don't know if it's just in my head or if it's a world of itself. I don't know if I am somehow being enveloped by it. As far as I know, my employers still have not noticed. Sometimes when I'm driving in the dark at night or in stormy weather, I'll see a pair of headlights, perfectly normal headlights, except there's no car behind them. They'll move around, drive like a car would. Sometimes they come in the opposite direction and they're gone in a flash. Sometimes they're in another lane, going the same direction, and then they'll be overtaking you and disappear. It's very hard to explain. I don't know what they are, and sometimes I see freeway exits that aren't supposed to be there. Exit 189 Airport Way, exit 190 Martin Luther King Way, exit 191 Commercial Street, exit 828761 Tannhauser's Crypt. I haven't taken any of those exits. I keep going, and I'm getting more tempted, but I'm terrified of what I'll discover on them. There's a radio channel I've discovered. AM band. If I'm able to find it, it's usually the same frequency, wherever I am in the country. That shouldn't be possible. It's one of those evangelical channels, fire and brimstone type preachers. It's playing 24 hours a day, the same guy nonstop, no commercials. He hardly takes a breath. He likes to preach about damnation and eschatology, weird people names and places from all over, from extinct languages. When he quotes Bible verses, they're usually verses that aren't actually in the Bible, at least from no canon that I know. I check in the Bibles in hotel rooms every night, and I'm pretty sure I'll start finding them someday, I guess, but not in the versions of the Bible that are provided to us. Something has to happen. I can quit the paranormal, and it will still be there. My employers can discover and close the loophole or something else. Maybe something worse than my employers finding me will happen to me. It's all very distracting. I think that's part of the reason I don't remember where I am when I wake up. It's not always just restless sleep. I think I'll wake up in a place that doesn't really exist someday. It's like the whole world, or at least my world, is coming apart at the seams. I wonder, what would happen if I installed a microphone?
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.